with Netflix or something like that.
Before I start talking about three, I want to say something a little bit more general. So if you have a collection of MRI, II or MRI are R modules, there are two constructions that you can make to create a new R module. You can take the Cartesian product of the MRI. Right, so this is just the collection of all sequences that are II. Ah, so of course, I'm not assuming necessarily that the set I is finite. With AI and MRI. So that's a module. Another module where you could add component Y, you multiply by scale of component Y. But there's another thing which is called the direct sum of the MRIs, which is a subset of this guy, so it's a set of collected sequences AI, I, and I, but the AI, I, and MRI. But the AI is zero for AI is on zero for only finite infinity. So this is a subset of that data. They are equal to the set I is finite. If the set of indices is finite, it's two things are the same. But if the set of indices is infinite, you want to consider only the sequences that have only finite remaining from zero terms. Okay, so this is, and this is called the direct product, direct Cartesian product, and this is called direct sum. So here another way of thinking of this thing, that there are functions from I to, well, let me specialize now, and then I can talk about functions. So let's look at the case that R and I are equal to R. So the product of I in I of R is the set, you can also think of it as a set of functions F from I to R. Functions. And the inside here you have the direct sum of I and I of R, which is a set of functions from I to R. Right? Because the AI is the value of the function at I. The set of I, the set up of I non-zero is fine. So this is a bit like the group rings and stuff like that that I
talked
about. It's kind of a universal construction. So you can also think of it as so this guy is the universal object that if you give a module and a subset of the module with a map from I to the subset, there's a unique map from the module to the subset. So this guy is called the direct sum. Sum of I in I of R is called the free module on I. Free R module on the set I. And it has the following property if a proposition, indeed,
and the non-module and f, called p, is a function from I to m, the function. So for each element of the index set to get an element of m, there is unique p capital p from this side, which is the module homomorphism with a property that such that is that what? C of the what we call EI. EI is going to be the function from I to R, that's an EI of J is 0, J is from I, and the I of I is 1. Right, this is the canonical basis, right? This is 1 in the I coordinate and 0 in the I coordinate. Okay, so that's C of EI. There's only one possibility, right? So C of F, if you think of this guy as this, is going to be what? It's going to be some I F of I EI. Makes it, you know, I doesn't have to be necessarily finite, but you know, we'll be looking pretty soon at the finite case when I'm finite, or just talking about I, yeah. So in this case, it's a direct sum of the Cartesian product, and it's not the same thing as in vector spaces. If you want the map from Rn to some other vector space, all you have to do is give n vectors in the other vector space. Okay, so make a definition, make a sort of a non-module is called free, so free R-module is, it is isomorphic. Is it?
theorem is that the free module
requires in at least in two places set theory. If you have to prove this theorem in two generality, you're stuck with sort of set theory things. So first of all, you have to do strong MR arguments or something like that, and that's kind of arguments to deal with the infinite case. So I don't want to do the general case, maybe I'll just do the case with sets of finite. And, but also, if you want to do the case of two sets of finite for general rings, then the only proof that I know uses the fact that every ring has a maximal ideal, and that requires Gordon's lemma as well. So I'm going to cheat and I'm going to prove that theorem only for finite dimensional or finite rank modules over domain. So what I'm going to prove now is the following. If R is a domain and R to the M is isomorphic to R to the N, or M and N are positive integers, I'll prove this, which is a special case of that, is a case when the ring is a domain and the step phi and j are finite. I guess it is a long thing. R is a domain, R is a domain. Is equal to Rn, so there's nothing to prove, right? So the one direction is true, right? Okay. Because I guess it's just a question of the one direction that's there, even in the general case. There's a bijection between I and J, the Gaussian thing. So you're going to apply this. Okay. Use the bijection. Conversely, assume M from Rm to Rn is an isomorphism. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass to the pseudo fractions. Okay? So I'm going to... So in the general case of rings, what you do is, if you draw a domain, you make an isomorphism between R mod M to the N and R mod N to the N, where N is your maximal ideal, and then you have an isomorphism in the case of fields. But I don't want to even prove that every ring is a maximal ideal. I'm just going to use the zero ideal for setting only as a field as a domain. I want to construct
FM to FM, FM to FM. Where? F is a good impression.
Well, that should be easy. What's a map from RM to RM, right? So, give a map. I can use this proposition that ought to know where the base is going, right? So to know where, what his map is, all you need to know is where the base elements go. So f of ei is a I1 a-i-n, a-i-n, and then I go to 1 to m. So of course a linear map is given by a matrix, right? So that's this is true for modules as well, right? So if you give a map from here to here, all you have to do is give the matrix of how it operates on a standard basis. So you just write FEIA1IM. And then you define the map by the same basis, right? So consider F tilde to be the same map. So this by viewing AIM, we get that. But if you know where the base is old, you can extend linear. Again by this proposition. You use the same matrix to define it. Now the question is why is it inverted? Well, we have a G, you have an inverse, right? You have a G from FN to FM. And the hypothesis is that from our end to our end. The hypothesis is that you have that F has an inverse. It's a hydromorphism. So hydromorphism by definition will have an inverse. So there's a G, so that G O F equals F O G. G O F is an identity. And F O G is an identity. In their respective GOF is identity on RN and FOG is identity on RN. GOF goes from RM to RN. RN identity on RN. Now, this map G is also given by a matrix. Right? It's given by a matrix, yeah, so G of EI is DI1 DIM for I from 1 to N. And the fact that they're inverses of each other is that when you apply one matrix to the other matrix, you get the identity matrix. Right? And identity between the AIs and the B's, right? So, the fact that GOF and FOG. But don't worry about them. For multiply matrices, you have to have the right sizes, right? Yes. This is a, so I'm getting a
M by M matrix, and I'm getting an M by M matrix, and I can multiply and multiply them. Yeah, on the left and on the right, I got an M by M and an M by M. But our identities is expressed by the fact that their identity is something like sum of aij, bj, k is right, because they're both going to be expressed by something like this, right? That aij, bj, k is 1 if I equals k and 0 if I is not equal to k.
That's the composition of the. And also the
same thing for the other one, that B, I, A, K, J is also equal to 1, and 0, I,
That's how you express that the matrices are indices of each other. Right? That's the composition of the identity. But this identity holds fine if you view it as a formula for an element of R or element of S, right? So that is F contains R, because if this holds an R, it also holds an S.
So these identities hold an R will also hold an S.
And
view
the map to express the fact
and view the map. They express the fact. The whole J to the M.
So if you have a map from this module to this module, what are some domains, then you can, this map is given by a matrix, you can view the domain assigned to the fraction, you can use the same matrix to define an F tilde from F to the N to F to the N, and if you have a G from Rn to Rn, you get a G tilde from, same way, you use the same matrix to define a G tilde from Rn to Rn, and the fact that the that F and G are inverses of each other is expressed in terms of the matrix. The same matrix is defined in the map from Fn to Fn and Fn to Fn, so the same identity would say that F tilde is inverses of each other, and therefore you get an isomorphism. So F tilde is an isomorphism. So F is an isomorphism and F tilde is an isomorphism. So I think we're not going in the direction of the theorem. I'm simply going to prove something else. What I'm proving is that if these two modules are isomorphic, you make the corresponding vector spaces with the little fractions that they're going to be isomorphic. And now we're going to prove the theorem for vector spaces. But it's worth going through this construction because is an interesting so we can also prove the theorem. When R is a field. So in the case of a general ring, when there's not a domain, what you do is you try to maximize your chance to work with R by M, which is a field, and then you reduce the case. Yes?
So, some clarification, in that case, we know that S tilde is R module homomorphism of fields, right? Is it clear that it's an S module homomorphism?
Yes, because it's a matrix. So the matrix is an S, you know, I'm constructing a tilde to be an S module homomorphism by the matrix. Yeah. So, you know, if you have a linear map, if you have a module homomorphism, you get a matrix. But conversely, if you have a matrix, you construct a module. Because the theorem says that once you know where the basis elements go, you know what the homomorphism is. That was a previous theorem that I proved that I already erased. Once you know what the homomorphism does on the basis, you know what the homomorphism is. And so that applies to this guy. So what I'm saying is, the way to construct that tilde is by telling you where the basis elements go. And then there's a unique F module homomorphism that sends the basis elements to the guy that I told you about. There's a unique F module homomorphism that makes matrix representation. Yeah. Okay, so this is a, I'm sure you've seen, now that the rest of the proof is something you've probably seen before, you have F of, so then you call F of EI equals GI, I from 1 to M, and I want to prove that M is equal to N. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the, so I have two bases for my space. I have the maybe I shouldn't call them EI. Let me just call LX W1, WN, the N basis for R to the N. For example, the standard basis, but I don't want to be called an EI because then it's confusing. So I know that V1 is sum of lambda j Gabington is from 1 to n, or some lambda j is up. Right, because the every element in Rn is represented in terms of the space. And I also know that not all lambda j's are zero, because otherwise V1 would be zero, and it means that would mean that the kernel of S is not trivial, because these guys are from elements of a basis Rm, so they are non-zero, contradicting this test. One of these coefficients is non-zero. I'm going to renumber the coefficients in necessary to assume that the first is non-zero. So suppose lambda 1 is non-zero. And if it's not, if it's zero, then you renumber the coefficients of the and then what do I do? I can write then W1 is equal to 1 over lambda 1. That's why in the field, because I want to divide by lambda 1, G1 minus J1.
and of W. So what happens is that I can G1 can be expressed in terms of the W1 can be expressed in terms of G1 and the WJ.
In the after the same.
Ah, then. Yes. Right? Yeah. And it follows that you can replace W1, W2, WN is a basis for R and right, because every element of Rn can be expressed as a linear combination of the W's. You replace W1 by this thing and you end up with a linear combination of this guy. And conversely, if you have a linear combination of this guy, you can replace V1 by this and get a linear combination. You can replace, so this is a replacement argument. And then you keep doing that. You replace W2 by V2 and so on. So proceed this way. So now you look at V2, V2 is expressed in terms of this thing. Yeah, so let me do the next step. Now, V2 is equal to, V1, V1 plus sum J from 2 to N of Uj, Wj. And now I claim that some of those mu j's here are non-zero. Okay? So there exists a j greater than 2 with mu j non-zero. Or otherwise, V2 is lambda is mu 1 v 1, which implies that f of V2 minus mu 1 v 1 v 1 is 0. Right? So if this happens, then this happens because f of E2 is V2 and f of V1 is V1. But if this happens, it means that that f has a non-zero element in the kernel. So from the name of the so there is a j greater equal to 2 with me j greater equal to 0, different from 0, so you can replace, say assume mu 2 is equal to 0, and then you write what? You write W2 is equal to 1 over mu 2. V2 minus V1, V1 minus some J, 3 to N of mu J, W J. So, V1, V2, W3, WN is the basis. So you keep replacing a W by a V. So what could happen? It could happen that you first run out of V's, or you run out of W, or does they have the same number? Right? So if they have the same number, we prove what we want. If you run out of V's, then it's saying that. So what happens if you run out of V? You end up with V1, Vn, and then Vn plus 1, or Wn plus 1, up to Wm, so there's M, Wn. So that's what happens if you run out of V. You end up with something like this,
being a basis for Rn, but then F is not going to be surjective, right? Because this guy here are not in the image, or they're not a linear combination of those guys, because it's a basis. And, but the image of F is the thing with the linear combination of those guys. So if you run out of these, if N is less than N, you get something like this. You get, this is a basis, but then W n plus 1 does not belong to the indirect conversation. If you run out of W's, so if you end up with G1, Gn being a basis, so how do you run out of W's? G1, Gn is a basis, but there's still a it can be injected, right? Yeah, so that's how I'm trying to figure out how to write this. If
one of the leftover leftover D's could have to match the combination of the other D's.
Yeah. So if you end up, so at some point if you run out of W, you get, so if you run out of W, you get that G1, Gn is a basis for Rn, if n is bigger than m, m is bigger than n. But then Gn plus 1 is in Rn, is a linear combination. This is exactly what you say, I'm just writing down what you said. If you run out of W's, so you cover the thing with the first N D, and then it's a linear combination of G1, Gn, because it's a basis, i.e., I don't know, Vn plus 1 is the term of beta J, Vj, J plus 1 for N, which means, so, En plus 1 minus the sum of Vj, Vj, is the kernel of S. So it's not exact. So you can't have more reason values or more values than the isolation. It has as many reasons or many values, so the dimension is well defined. So that's the conclusion, is that the dimension is well defined, and if for modules we talk about the rank. So I refuse to the case of dimension, but it's a definition. R is a free module, and M is a free R module, then cardinality of any R for which M is a module to direct some line out of R is called the rank plus log R. The dimension for deficit is that is called the rank. Okay, now let's put some other definitions. So let M be an R module. Then if we have an element M or M, it's such that R M is zero, so that there exists an R in R, R non-zero, so that R M is zero, we call M a torsion. Torsion element. So if you remember, abelian groups are Z-modules, right? So the notion of torsion elements in an abelian group is the same as finite order. Okay? So the torsion elements are the elements of finite order in an abelian group. And a moderate torsion free today has no element of finite order. There's also another notion that it shows up in one of the problems that I assigned, which I'm not going to be using a lot in the course, but so that it's in the homework, the R torsion of M is the set M in M with R M is zero. And I guess this is sort of a submodule. And also the torsion is a submodule, so the R torsion and the torsion, whole torsion, and the torsion of the module is R submodule. Are a torsion-free Z-module with stronger from the steering cluster.
But it varies.
Now we prove this. Well, if M is in the sum of I and I of R, M is equal to AI, I and I, and if R is on 0, R and R, then Rm is equal to Rai. So if this is 0, which is 0, is equal to 0, it's only if Rai is 0 for all I, that requires an f double is applied to 0, but it becomes 2 f doubles are the same among the coordinates on this thing. Well, this would be the zero vector of all the coordinates, and it's zero. So all the coordinates are zero, but I is on zero, you're in a domain. So, which is why I say I is equal to I. The only vector in a free module that is torsion is a zero vector. So it's one distortion. Z mod 6 is a module over itself, then it's free because it's a free one-dimensional, free rank one module over thing, right? Over Z mod 6. Z mod 6 is a free rank one module over Z mod 6, but it's not offered free because the element 3 is killed by 2, so that's 0. 3 is not. 3 is torsion. The notion of torsion free and yeah, it's not very nice when you're dealing with non-domain. We're never sufficient for that. And just to finish, let me state, so in one more definition, an R module is finally generated. If it's a quotient, three more. Finally, the model is one that has there's a finite set of vectors, and that every vector is a linear combination of this vector. That's all it is. But not necessarily unique. So, again, this means that everything is a linear combination uniquely. Finally, generated our module is just that everything is a linear combination of a finite set, but not necessarily unique. And the theorem that we're going to aim for in the next belief is that if R is a PID, then every finitely generated homomorphism is a redirection. seeking harmony. Seeking harmony, i.e., for the amore. The amor zero is art, so I guess I'm going to use this. So these are the secret masters, the courses of the three masters in one. So the PID is I'm going to do the first version of the theorem. So there's a free version of the theorem. In fact, I've got to say a more precise version because there's a uniqueness part, so you can actually say a lot about the composition in terms of physical models. As a consequence, one thing that we're going to prove is that a finitely generated quantum free module over PID is free. So if you have a guy like this where A is non-zero, then this guy thought it's killed by A. So the only things like this that are torsion free is R itself. But it's the only guy of this size that is torsion free. So if you have a torsion free finitely generated module over PID, then it's free. So it's a partial converse to this theorem. So if the converse of this theorem is true, it's one, that the ring of PID, and two, the module is finitely generated. So as a bonus, the rational numbers is an example in the exercise to give you an example of a non-finitely generated number. If it were finitely generated, you know what we have. Three and it's not. So next week I hope we will restate this theorem in a much more precise form and then I'll improve.